It's Thursday, January 25th, 2018, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 212, Bomb Fried Chicken. Runtime for this episode is 43 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that hates Star Wars, or at least copies of it. My name is Jeremy.
I'm a member of an elite squad that still needs training on a daily basis. I'm Tyler.
You're a member of an elite squad? Damn, I don't want to meet those guys ever, because that'd be really awkward. My name is Zach.
You know, I am an employed professional in a highly specialized field. I'm the best at what I do, and what I do is very neutral.
I will take your word for that. I'm nodding slowly because
yeah,
Tyler,
you know that joke was
cares.
Funnier in my head. So
we played Bomberman Hero. That game was funner in my head, and we're gonna talk all about it eventually. But we're gonna put it off for as long as we can first because it's not very good.
Yeah, that's true. I notice that we tend to procrastinate with horrible games.
Yeah, it's because we don't have much to say.
We procrastinate with other games too. You know that, right?
No, mostly you. So speaking of you, what have you been playing, Zach?
So I actually haven't been up to all that much, although last night I kind of went on a classics game. I actually bought Wolfenstein 3D because it was like $1.25 on Steam.
That's the old one, right?
The first one.
Yeah.
And I was like, this probably won't take very long to download. It was done downloading by the time I hit finish on Steam. Because that game is not very big.
Gotta love old games.
Tried playing it, and man, that is not a good game. Well, it doesn't have a strafe. It has tank controls.
I mean, that's a precursor to Doom, right?
Yes.
I always wondered why, like, a lot of people really like the original Wolfenstein. I'm like, how did Doom improve on that? And I think I just learned how to improve on
that. That's part of it. There's also a lot of other little things that Doom did better than Wolfenstein 3D. So I played that for a little while, but I also played Unreal Tournament 2004, which...
It's been a long time since I played that game.
I really, really like that game. I've owned it for quite a while.
It's multiplayer only, isn't it?
There's actually a campaign mode on it.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to really describe, but it actually acts as like a sporting thing where you can actually steal players after you beat a team, you know, after a certain point. It's a little bit like the... I realized I'm the only one here who actually played the Biggs story mode, but like after you beat a team, you can actually try and steal an enemy player so that you can get better. Your team gets better.
Like the 3-on-3 mode in NHL 2017.
Yes.
It's a very weird mode where the mascots are like secret aces for every team, and it is, and you after you defeat each team, you get to steal their ace player. It is very strange.
That is very weird. So I was actually playing a lot of those because... I like Unreal Tournament 2004 because it's one of those classic type games and their assault modes are really fun. I kind of wish that I could actually play it with friends, but I think I'm the only one that actually owns that game. Played a bunch of League, just an absolute bunch of League because big surprise. That's what I do.
You know, you hadn't for a while. I feel like this is a whole new year for you. The year of League.
Well, I do plan on playing Ranked this season. But I also planned on playing Ranked last season.
I was going to say, doesn't everyone plan on playing Ranked every season?
So I'm not even entirely sure what to go with that because, like, I haven't played Ranked yet because the League season hasn't started. And I don't see a point in doing my placements for the preseason where everything's going to reset again anyway.
It might be useful for you to get a feel for what the competition's going to be like. But
I already kind of know what it's going to be like, so I'm not overly worried about it.
Noobs. All noobs.
Well, last time I placed, I was in Silver 2, which is actually pretty good. Because Gold is actually better than the majority of League players, because the majority of players, like the average, is actually like Silver 3.
Do they? Well, I mean, I guess it's ELO under the hood, right? So it's normalized in some respect.
It's MMR under the hood. So, like, you match with people who are close to your rating.
Yeah, well, how is that calculated, though, is my question. I assumed it was just ELO.
I know it was ELO. I think they may have phased that out. But if they have, they do not tell you how it's calculated under the hood.
Okay.
I'm planning on doing that, but I haven't actually started doing that. I need to do a lot more, like, general practice. But I'm doing pretty well on Yorick. I don't think I've actually lost a game on Yorick since the preseason started.
As in a last pour?
Yes.
Okay.
He's Slash. Only he summons ghosts.
Oh, ghost Slash.
I actually use the Slash skin. So instead of hitting people with a shovel, I hit them with a base.
And say, live and let die as you do it?
No, I just kind of smacked them with
a base.
Welcome
to the jungle. And night train.
There's usually some kind of swearing involved, usually relating to, do you really want to fight me, bitch?
Anything else, Zach?
I got to complain a lot about the fact that I can't play Overcooked more often with people because they don't want to implement an online system for that.
Oh, geez. So I tried playing Overcooked with Ed and Katie. Katie is not a person.
Katie seems like not the best choice.
So Alex jumped in, and that worked a lot better.
I was going to say, was it all four of you at that point?
No.
Or you, Ed, and Alex?
I gave Katie the important role of supervisor because we found that Alex was extremely useful. Did we ever talk about Overcooked on the podcast?
We haven't. No, because we played it after we talked about it. After we recorded last week.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I actually brought it up. Because we all played Overcooked as a group. And the three of us are actually apparently not very fun to watch play Overcooked because we all generally settle into a pattern and do pretty well as a unit.
I think the reason we stopped doing well at the end was not because the levels got harder, but because I got really tired and started losing my patience and not wanting to deal with it anymore.
That might have been part of it.
I had to cook it.
I was perfectly fine. I enjoyed the game.
I like it a lot.
I really wish they had an online functionality to it, and I read the developers' reasons why they hadn't, and I couldn't help but shake my head and say, this just reads like bullshit, so this is developer doublespeak at its finest.
I almost feel like local co-op is a harder technology to implement anymore than Netplay, simply because Netplay has so much loose code hanging around for it.
Their reasoning was basically, we designed it so that you could play with friends on the couch. Well, I have a friend of mine that lives an hour away, another friend that lives a half an hour away, and we're playing it on a PC, where most people don't have their PCs in a freaking living room. So,
yeah. I find the reasoning very, it tracks to me. The intended experience is for everybody to be in the same room.
I like that. The problem is it's not exceptionally practical, I think is the point that Zach's trying to make.
Because it's on a PC. I don't care that a game that's designed around co-op on the same place on, the Xbox One, the Switch, or the PS4, where it is going to be in an area where people are going to congregate. Like I've said before, Tyler is kind of the outlier in that his computer is in a living room with a big TV.
Not with millennials. It's a standard setup anymore.
Yeah, my computer would be connected to my big TV in my living room if I had a living room.
This is where I put my big computer, if I had one.
But, mine is kind of in a side corner. It's not quite an office, but it's not. It is very much not designed for more than one person to be accessing it at a time.
Counterpoint. It is also where your Xbox is.
Okay, that's true. But I think
counterpoint.
I don't think a lot of people have that, because most of the setups that I've seen do not utilize that kind of idea. They're in an office or a side room. They're with the TV is something else. So I just think that if it's on a computer, if it's going to be based around co-op, you need online functionality, because people are generally using their computers for the online functionality you're going to get with that.
I use it for the fact that I don't have to buy a new console ever, mostly, but
you just have to buy a new PC instead.
That's why you bought a Switch.
I didn't buy it. Alex bought it. She also bought the Wii U and the Wii. So
the answer is not so much that so you don't have to buy them, it's just that because your wife buys them all the time and you get to use them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a convenient side effect. She buys them mostly for me, but also specifically for one game she wants to play. And then she's like, oh, I just have this random console laying around. Guess I'll just leave it here with Splatoon plugged in.
So that's actually a really fun game to play cooperative. I obviously have my personal gripes, but the challenges are fun. It's fun to work out a system as a group. Like, we had one level where we couldn't walk past each other, so we just developed everybody goes counterclockwise, and anytime somebody passes this task, they switch off.
So you know, because we never talked about it, Overcooked is a cooking game where you have to, figure out basically a supply chain to get orders cooked and then to your delivery conveyor belt. So you'll have to, grab tomatoes and then chop them and then put them in a bowl on a stove to cook them into soup.
From an overhead perspective,
overhead single screen setup, and you have three buttons. You have pickup, action, and dash.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. You also have a curse button, which I only found out about at the very last level.
There's a curse button?
Yeah, it was Y on the 360 controller.
What did it do?
It makes you spew cartoon expletives. It's completely useless. Well, I guess it's so that you can, yell at the people you're in the room playing the game with. I don't know why.
But you're in the room playing the game with them.
Exactly.
When you guys fucked up, I let you know. And actually, I think more people got mad at me for doing something wrong.
I was going to say, we found while we were playing that Alex was playing supervisor for a while, which is actually very useful for our group. I tried making Katie supervisor after we switched her out. Now, I should never let Katie coordinate any group activities ever. Well, I've tried to let her be navigator in the car. It's a terrible choice.
Well, the thing is, like, the three of us, even Alex centralized everything, but we all tend to gravitate towards specific tasks, and we'd already kind of worked out divisions of labor on a lot of the levels.
Yeah, but you were talking about that one where you all had to, like, go, like, run
counterclockwise.
Yeah. We tried doing that with Ed, and he just, like, he never got on the program with it.
I'm pretty sure that's just Ed.
It wasn't on purpose. He was trying. It just, like, the concept just never gelled.
Well, I tend to do, like, efficiency things like that anyway, so, like, I'm already gonna kind of roll with that kind of tactic, but other than that, what have you been playing, Tyler?
I've been playing a weird mix of things. So, in the time since we last recorded, I've technically beaten Mario Odyssey.
What did you think of that ending?
I loved it.
Yeah, so did I. Oh. And also, the bunnies, the entire time, I was like, this is kind of weird, these bunny characters. And then when the last level was the moon, it just clicked. I'm like, oh, they're evil bunny wedding planners from the moon. Of course. It's very good.
Not just the moon, the dark side of the moon.
Oh, did you get to the darker side of the moon yet?
I have unlocked it. I haven't gone there yet.
I'm pretty sure it's just a boss rush.
I'm basically just going through every world and, like, mopping up right now. I have a specific complaint with the post-game in that I don't like that all the new moons are already marked for you when you
on the
unlock
map.
Them.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, most people are probably playing a lot of those kind of things for the scavenger hunt aspect, which I don't care for scavenger hunts, but I can see the appeal. And so if you're going to mark where everything is, that kind of removes the fun of a scavenger hunt.
Yeah. And also, there are already mechanics in the game to mark them if you need hints. So doubling up on it is weird. That said, I only played the first couple of levels for all the moons and had a lot of fun with them. There was one where I just couldn't find it, so even with it marked.
Yeah, I had that on one of them, although I ended up getting it eventually. It took me way longer than it should have. I spent forever trying to find the last three coins in the Sand Kingdom, or the last three purple coins. I think I've actually uncovered all the purple coins in the game now, except for maybe at Bowser's Castle.
That might be my favorite level. I love that version of Bowser's Castle, and I love the little, like, spear nose things you possess and use to get around.
It was a lot of fun. I don't know. I really liked it. I'm kind of slowing down on it. I want to do a 100% run of it, but it might take me a while to actually finish it off.
Yeah, that's how I felt, too. When I finished the game, I was real excited for the post-game, but each time I booted it up, I was a little less excited, and then I stopped booting it up.
Well, and I think it goes back to the lack of a proper scavenger hunt thing. Like,
but I still have moons that I didn't get the first time that aren't marked, so I'm not sure if that's the case for me.
Well, and I also still have moons that aren't marked in some worlds, because, like, towards the end of the game, as I realized that the plot just wanted me to move along, I started to be less thorough in the first playthrough.
In hindsight, it kind of seems designed to be like a just linear Mario game your first time through, and then when you beat it, your reward is a Mario 64 style scavenger game.
Yeah.
Because of
I
all
can
the stuff that
it
unlocks it. After you finish it.
I suspect I'm going to follow through and do a 100% run of it. But I'm probably not going to play the game for a while after that, because I'll probably be pretty burnt out on it.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I don't know that there's much to do after you 100% it. Like,
no, I
don't
mean,
know
like,
that it's a game that wants that, you to revisit it.
That's kind of what 100% is that you've done everything.
Well, I mean, like, replay the game, though. Like, I've done that before. The other thing I've been attempting to play, so I played some of Zero Time Dilemma, I mentioned last week. And I got further into that game, and I love the concept of this. There's, like, branching timelines, and, like, you can go back and revisit scenes and try to choose the other thing, and, like, it's awesome. So the game opens, not a huge spoiler, with a bunch of people trapped in a room, and a guy's like, I'm not Jigsaw. I'm gonna flip a coin. If it's heads, you die. At least six of you. If it's tails, you can just leave. And I guess correctly the first time. And the game just ends.
That's pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, he keeps his word. He just lets you all out. And then you all wake up in the middle of the desert. And you're like, what the hell just happened? It's pretty amusing. So I got fairly far into it. And I realized that all these characters have a backstory. And a lot of them know each other. And they're like talking about like this horrible thing that wipes out most of humanity. And there's some time travelers. And then I realized that maybe I should go play the other games in the series before I play this one. So, I stopped playing that and downloaded the Nonary games, because I actually bought Zero Time Dilemma in a trilogy pack. The one problem I've heard with the Nonary games is, in Zero Time Dilemma, if you've already played through a cutscene once and you just want to choose a different choice, or I guess make the other choice, you can just skip the entire cutscene and go straight to the decision.
But that feature is not in the older games?
Yeah, that feature is not in at least the first game. And I technically have the third game. Zero Time Dilemma takes place between the two. Apparently there's some weird, like, X-Men Days of Future Past nonsense where, like, some guy's consciousness gets projected back in time at some point. So, I don't know. I'm going to go play the Nonary games, which sounds very similar. It also has very Phoenix Wright-style graphics to me. I haven't actually started it yet, though. I haven't had a whole lot of time to play that game. There's something else I grabbed recently. I grabbed a bunch of games on Steam sale. I got Lie Eat, which is a JRPG about a, like, anime-style dragon girl, I guess. It's obviously made with RPG Maker. Oh no, there was that anime that came out with, like, a dragon who ends up, like, living in some person's apartment.
Oh, Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Yes. Yes. Basically that.
I love the look on your face, Zach, until you understood exactly what was going on. And then you said it like, it's like, oh yeah, like Home Improvement. That sitcom with Tim Allen that everyone knows about.
Lady Kobayashi's Dragon Maid is freaking fantastic.
That style of dragon, though. Except that she can lie to create physical embodiments of her lies, and then she devours them for sustenance. Also, she's a shapeshifter.
Huh.
So, right. And she's traveling around with a mysterious vagabond. Neither of them remember their past, and they wander the world and do cool stuff. It was one of the highest rated JRPGs to come out last year, and I had never heard of it before until Humble Bundle was like, hey bro, you want this game and a bunch of other stuff for a dollar? I'm like, yes. Yes, I do. I also picked up Bioshock Infinite in the same bundle. So
Bioshock Infinite's quite good.
Yeah, I'm excited to play it. It was, I think I paid the $5 price point.
A little too existential for the last half hour, but...
I like existentialism.
I don't like being talked at in my video games.
I play JRPGs.
I like having characters talk to each other and pretend it's not talking at me. I haven't actually been playing a whole lot, though. I started New Leaf, finally, and I'm having a really hard time wanting to actually play it.
I thought you already played that.
Nope, Alex did. Alex has played New Leaf to her satisfaction twice and is starting a third run. She started playing Pocket Camp, and she's like, man, you know what I should be playing instead? New Leaf, an actual video game. Which inspired me to finally start playing it. I think I'm actually going to do it the way they intend you to play the game and not use time travel at all.
Do you usually time travel at Animal Crossing?
Yeah, I have never not, but I have found that, one, my time for games is limited enough recently that I don't know that I have enough time to, like, really sink into Animal Crossing when I have so many other things I could be playing. And also, every time I open up my DS, it's a reminder that I have Smash installed on my DS. So I've literally brought a lot of Smash. I've been having a hard time actually wanting to play New Leaf, but I really enjoy it when I do it. I can just only do it for about 15-minute increments. Although, they finally added a feature that I've wanted since City Folk, which is the ability to simultaneously play in a town with another person. And Alex and I, while punch drunk at like 1 in the morning, were playing hide-and-seek around her town for a while, which was... a surprising amount of fun.
That does sound like it could be fun. You know what game you might actually enjoy is that whole Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy. That's on Steam.
I have a Let's Play video to watch of that game, but that is all I've heard of it from.
I've
not watched it yet.
What is this?
I haven't
about?
Watched the video yet, so I don't know.
You know nothing? I'm wondering why Zach is recommending it to me based on what I have just said.
It's a game in which you play a guy in a cauldron with a hammer. And you are trying
in
to climb
cauldron.
A... Yes, and you are climbing all sorts of random crap with this hammer.
I'm confused about what's going on. You're climbing things...
Yes.
...with a hammer.
Yes.
Do you just hit things so hard that your hammer sticks into them, or...?
Yes? I've not played it, but one of the people that I do watch did.
Unrelated, but when Alex is satisfied with this run of New Leaf, you should get her on that Stardew Valley... Now that you have a Switch.
That's actually a really good point. I maybe should, because she was watching me play Harvest Moon 64, and she's like, I would probably enjoy this game. She was actually watching me play Link Between Worlds, and she's like, I kind of want to play a Zelda game. Is this one easy? I'm like, yeah, this one's pretty easy.
You should give her Wind Waker, I think. I think Wind Waker is the correct Alex Zelda.
That was the other one I suggested, but she's seen me play that twice already, so...
I started playing Stardew Valley.
Oh, you did?
Kind of. I was going to buy beans, but I couldn't figure out if I needed another... thing to build in order to plant them, or if I could just do it and have it and it would automatically put down the stake.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure green beans, is it just beans or green beans? Whatever they are, they work just like regular crops.
Okay.
Although I think they are kind of like corn in Harvest Moon in that you cannot walk through them.
Okay, because you can walk through the parsnip seed,
yeah,
whatever the hell
you
start
can walk
with.
Through most of the crops in Stardew Valley, and I think you might not be able to walk through those, but otherwise they work like them. I have not played that game in a couple of years now, so.
I just started it, and then I was like, yeah, this is kind of fun. What else do I got?
Anything else, Tyler?
I have not been playing anything else to my knowledge. I may have been playing something without my knowledge, but no, it's been an unfortunately busy week, so I haven't actually gotten around to playing a whole lot. Oh, Splatoon. I got S+ rank in Splat Zones. I can't remember if I mentioned this, but they split out the rankings for different ranked types into...
You did mention that, and then you're not able to get to, what is it, S rank on the
I was barely like, able really to heavy... get past B rank in Clam Rush.
Okay, that's
no
one.
One knows what the hell is Clam Rush. No, I hit S+ in Splat Zones and S in Tower and S in Rainmaker. There we go. Although I lost my S+ rank in Splat Zones. I've definitely picked a weapon in this game. It is the weapon I mained for a long time in the first one, until I found the other weapon that I really liked. I have unlocked the other weapon that I really like in Splatoon 2, but I don't like it as much in 2 as I did in 1, so I went back to my old default, which was a 52 gal with point sensors. Everyone likes point sensors. I think that's it. I think Splatoon is what I've been playing the most of, because I can pick it up and then... I feel like Mario Odyssey should satisfy that niche where I don't have to play it for a long time.
Yeah, that's, I think, what killed Mario Odyssey for me, was not playing it for a long time. Like, because when I was playing through the story, I would sit down, that would be the game I played, like, after work that night.
Yeah.
But when it's just like, I'll collect a couple stars, it doesn't hold me the same way.
Did you ever beat Mario Rabbids?
No, I didn't. I went back to it after Odyssey and was like, I don't want to finish this game.
I just remembered that you kind of stopped talking about it. I wasn't sure if that was because you had beaten it or because you were finished with it.
Yeah, when I went back to it, I was like, yeah, I quit kind of when the game starts to get hard, not like super hard, but it starts to be a bit of a challenge. And I was like, I think I've seen everything I need to. I do kind of want to unlock Yoshi, but...
But maybe not enough to actually play enough to unlock Yoshi?
Yeah.
What other games have you finished?
I haven't finished anything. I've been kind of depressed this week, and which means I play every video game for 5 minutes and then stop.
Yeah, I get that.
So I've been playing Dokkan Battle and Digimon Links for 5 minutes at a time, which is cool because I can make progress in them. And then I started Wind Waker. It's been 3 years exactly since I last tried to play Wind Waker, and I felt real depressed and old when the game told me that your save file was last played exactly 3 years ago today. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, Wind Waker. I'll beat you one day.
Dawn of the final day.
Yeah. Same thing with West of Loathing and Pokemon Ultra Moon. Just played them for very little bits. I also find West of Loathing to be very nice for small chunks. You can do like one side quest. And then...
Yeah, that one's actually very good if like you only want to play for 10 to 15 minutes.
And the side quests are clearly where they put all their focus, which I also know because the developers said as much, but that they feel very nice. They're a very nice bite-sized chunk of content of get quest, accomplish quest, see funny joke, get reward.
I play League for that.
League takes about 10 times as long as a Kingdom of Loathing side quest.
Well, I mean, it's like no, for about 10 to 15, hour, right? 20 minutes. Depends on if you're playing ARAMs, it's usually about 10 to 20
ARAM
minutes.
True. I feel like there was one other thing I've been playing too. That might be everything. But yeah, a little bit of everything, making no progress in anything. And to the point in Wind Waker where you get the Wind Waker.
Nice. That's fairly early, but not like the earliest, right?
Yeah, it's after you get the sail.
Yeah.
I have not really done a dungeon other than that early stealth dungeon. That is my understanding is you come back to when you have a sword and can beat everyone up.
I don't remember which dungeon you're talking about.
It's like, I think where they're taking all the girls at the beginning. Look, I played it 3 years ago.
Oh, that one. Yeah. Yeah. No, you do come back to that eventually. Yeah, where old man Ganon is hanging out.
Yeah. I want to get to that part where you stab Ganon in the forehead, though.
Yep, it's a great scene. It's also surprisingly violent for a Zelda game.
Yeah, exactly. Especially that one, which is all cartoons and happy sales.
What's great is when you do it, Zelda just stares at you. She's like, did you really just fucking do that?
I really want a Zelda game where you find the Master Sword in Ganon's statue forehead, and you pull it out and
it
comes to life.
Ganon.
Yes. Tell me that doesn't sound like the best.
One of these days, it may happen.
That would require a different bad guy to start things off for Zelda, and since Nintendo is not interested in doing that...
They did that a lot with Zelda games.
Link Between Worlds has no Ganon.
Yeah, I can name like 5 off the top of my head where another villain starts it, and probably 3 were no Ganon.
Yeah, Link to the Past also is not started by Ganon. He's just kind of there at the end.
Yeah, there are a lot of them where it's like, surprise, Ganon at the end, and you're like, okay, I guess I can play tennis for a boss battle.
Yeah, I'm surprised how many of those end up with tennis.
I really like that. Dude, Twilight Princess's Ganon fight is still my favorite. It's got a tennis phase, and a let's turn into monsters phase, and a horseback riding phase, and a straight up duel surrounded by fire phase.
I forgot about the duel surrounded by fire.
Don't you just throw the fishing lure one way, get him distracted, and then
that's
rail
on him?
That's
a different one, but you can do that, yes. Tell me that's not the best tactic for all sword fights. Whoosh!
Fishing lure?
Oh, I'm distracted! No, my back! It is full of a sword!
That's how I fight all my battles.
Here's where we're stalling, so let's stop and get to the assignment.
Oh, I was gonna say, maybe spoilers for Link Between Worlds, which is what, 7 years old?
Not that old. It's like 3 years old.
Yeah, well. Spoilers, the villain is actually Bizarro Zelda.
Yep. It is amazing it took them that many games to get to Hyrule, right?
Right.
It's just sitting right there.
Right underneath Hyrule.
Yep.
Obviously.
Is it Princess Hilda, or did I make that up?
No, it's Hilda. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now we're done
stalling. So speaking of princesses, Bomberman Hero, a game that starts with this exciting cutscene for this grand story of a princess who looks like she's in the ship from Spaceballs that the princess is escaping
It's literally just the opening from Star Wars, though.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the opening from Spaceballs. They couldn't even get to the opening from Star Wars. They had to settle for Spaceballs, which, to be fair, also something I'd rather be consuming than Bomberman Hero. And she's like, Roybot, take this disc. We are getting tractor beamed.
And he's like, but what about you, princess? And she's like, don't worry about it. I'm going to nobly sacrifice myself. Meanwhile, cut to Bomberman, who just got back from a lunch break or something.
Yeah, and a robot is like, okay, now I will train you. I know this is like your 10th game or something, but clearly you need training. Maybe this is a prequel. I don't think so, because the final boss of this game is a recurring Bomberman villain. So
maybe it's the first time you fight him.
Maybe.
I didn't get that far. Yeah, I mean, there's an exciting incident.
I think I
accidentally
skipped this.
I have beat this game, but only because I own it for N64 that my mom got me as a gift for Christmas that she had bought from a Blockbuster, and someone on the Blockbuster save file had already beaten it.
Does that count as you beating it?
I finished the final level.
Okay.
Let me put it that way.
Fair enough.
You've seen the ending.
Yes, I've beaten the final boss.
You were the guy.
Yeah.
So your training apparently consists of platforming and figuring out how the hell you bomb.
So this game is not like any other Bomberman game. It is a 3D platformer, but it doesn't play like either Bomberman 64 or The Second Attack, which is the game that would come out later in the Bomberman series. It doesn't really have anything in common with the classic Bomberman maze running games. It's from this odd, like, not quite isometric perspective. It's not an isometric game, but
close.
Like, it's almost like overhead.
I was describing it as 2.5D earlier.
Well, I was thinking of it as the way a lot of the, at least the sideways levels, play out as they play out kind of like a beat-em-up in the formatting that you're working with.
Okay, but you can go up and down or right to left. That actually makes sense.
Yeah, I actually like
that. It's a little more 3D than that, but that is a good comparison point.
It really comes up when you're trying to jump on ledges and you're not entirely sure how far in the background that ledge is.
Yep.
Remember when I told you that one guy who thought that Land Soccer was better than any Zelda game maybe has not played Land Soccer in about a decade? I feel like this game has the same problems that Land Soccer does, is you can't really tell what level things are on.
It's also, as far as I'm aware, the only Bomberman game where you can jump. I said that and realized it's a lie, but neither of the N64 games let you jump.
But do you not in 64?
No. In the original Bomberman 64, you had to basically bomb jump. You have to, if you wanted to go vertical, you had to like make a trail of bombs to navigate them and either get a power up that let you detonate them remotely or do it quick enough that you beat their explosions.
Yeah, no, this sounds like I maybe remember that.
And I've heard, but only from TV Tropes, so not exactly a credible source, but it explains so much that I believe it has to be true. In development, this was not a Bomberman game. It was a 3D Bonk game.
That
makes some sense.
That would explain a lot of the enemies, but like the chickens happen in Bonk too. Oh man.
Yeah, when you're fighting and chickens like, with grenades, I think you've done something wrong.
And even like the way you cling to the ledge, I can just imagine a 3D Bonk doing that with his teeth, and it would explain really a lot, I think. Other than maybe the Star Wars plot.
Maybe. I don't know. Bonk's a pretty weird game.
So,
it would explain why Bonk needs to be trained in the ways of using advanced equipment.
Yeah, grenades, generally.
So you need to navigate these 3D platform levels with this very awkward and difficult to control jump, and this bomb throw attack that's almost impossible to judge the distance of.
Hey, you don't just throw bombs, you can also set bombs and kick them, or drop them out of your ass in midair.
You can kick them? I never managed to do that.
If you walk into a bomb that's on the ground, you will kick it.
Or
maybe because I always bailed away from them as soon as I put them out.
Yeah, you have to like put it on the ground and then one of two buttons will kick it for you, or you can just walk in.
I was just always, when I put them down where an enemy would go, and if I wasn't sure the explosion radius would get him, I put down like as many bombs as I could around the area.
That's
that
generally what
I did in there.
The combat feels very awkward to me, especially when you start getting enemies that can like jump and dodge around your bombs. We're all amateur video game critics here, but the thing I've learned the more games we play is that the most important thing for any platformer is the controls. And in fact, my advice for anyone developing a platform game would be create a level with no enemies and see if it is fun just to maneuver in that world. Like, all the Mario games I think are fun to just walk around in. The Sonic games I think are fun to just, like, run and go fast in. Pulse Man I think is very fun to use that vector tackle to get around places. This game is so bad just moving around in.
You're constantly at war with both the perspective and the controls, and that's what's absolutely infuriating about it.
What's great is that they actually give you some control over the camera. The problem is, if you've ever seen an N64 controller, it's this awkward three-prong nightmare.
It was not designed for a human hand.
It was designed for
squids.
But you could press one of the C buttons and hold that, and it would change your direction. But as soon as it let it go, it would recenter back to whatever the plane it had been on before. So if you could somehow manage to hold the C button down while also throwing bombs and jumping, you could like maybe finagle the camera in a manner that's useful.
And there's nothing on the surface wrong with the controls. They just don't respond well. The jump doesn't feel good.
I started
playing this. It's fine-tuning. It's not like it's on a weird button or anything like that. It just doesn't quite work.
Like, I started playing this, and it felt very early N64 game to me.
And they'd already made an N64 Bomberman game. This is almost 3 years into the N64's lifespan. This is post-Ocarina of Time and GoldenEye.
Yeah, and like, this is like,
to be fair, GoldenEye is a little bit of a different beast to this.
Well, sure, but I'm saying those are two games that control well on the N64, right? That understand what they're supposed to do.
Yes, this is true. Although GoldenEye is kind of awkward with
a second stick. GoldenEye shows its age, but
yes, all those N64 first-person games show their age because they're clearly designed for use without a second stick, and man, controlling that camera, I don't know how we did it when we were kids.
Carefully. We've evolved to better schemes.
But you were saying, Tyler.
I played a lot of N64 games because there was a Blockbuster close to my house and I owned an N64. And, like, there were some of them that were just, like, really bad. Like, they clearly didn't know what they were doing. Gex 64. I don't know if you guys ever
encountered that. No, I never played Gex 64.
Like, that was also really odd. Like, it was another game that came out after Mario 64 that just didn't control nearly as well as Mario 64. And this game has that feel to me that it was just a game that got slapped onto the N64 and they had no idea what they were really doing with it.
Yeah, and like, it's a Bomberman game without multiplayer. What are you doing? I mean, I guess you already have Bomberman 64, so there's already Bomberman multiplayer available, but also you already have Bomberman 64. How hard is it to just take that multiplayer and slap it on here? And anyway, I was just saying that the game should be fun without the enemies. And it's not. And the enemies don't do it any favors. They are the worst enemy designs I can remember. They're just like clowns on balls and crabs and chickens, like we
chickens
said.
Chickens that explode into
like,
smaller chickens.
Geodude.
They're like these the default creation. They're like the default video game creation enemies.
Yeah, it's like the default enemies you get in Unity. Like, there's just no charm or thought putting into these enemy designs. The bosses are a little more interesting. The first one has this really cool mechanic, or at least I think it's cool, where you fight him on like this chessboard, and he does this slide kick move where he'll kick your bombs away. And wherever he finishes, they're like game board tiles, and that determines what attack he does.
Oh, that's
so
neat.
You have to like figure out where he's going to land to avoid his attack. And
that's cool.
Actually a mechanic I find pretty cool, but the way you hurt him is by throwing bombs at him, and the bomb throwing is not good in this game, so.
Hey, you could also kick.
Perfect.
Kicks go further and are way harder to aim.
But he will just kick them back at you.
Oh, well.
He's immune to that.
You have to throw them at him.
Yeah.
I didn't get to him, but that's what I got out of that.
So you also mentioned that there are vehicle levels, which are apparently slightly less awful.
I wanted to talk about the power-ups first.
Okay.
There are a couple. There's a bomb vest that stops you from getting hurt by your own explosions.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was unprocessed rib meat.
I knew that it was some kind of vest, but I didn't know that's what it did.
I think I only know that because it was in a Nintendo Power issue. There's also Hearts Up. This is also, as far as I'm aware, the only Bomberman game where you can take multiple hits.
Yep. Oh, we should definitely talk about that once we finish describing the power-up. How many hits you have.
Oh, you take 5 hits, I think?
Yeah, and also the fact that you don't regenerate health when you beat a level.
When you beat a level, you just stay with the amount of health you had, which makes no sense to me because there are no checkpoints in these levels. They're small enough that doesn't really bother me. How small the levels are bothers me, but they're small enough that they don't really need checkpoints.
There's absolutely no reason to refill the character's HP in a game like this at the beginning of every level.
Absolutely no reason to do so, or no
to
reason
to not do so.
Okay.
Yes, I agree with your intent.
Did I not say that?
You said that wrong. You said there's no reason to fill it. Okay. And I was going to be like, Zach, I disagree with you.
No, but no, that is misspoken by me. There is absolutely no reason not to refill the player's.
You have a limited number of lives, but this is in that awkward area where you had continues, but continuing did exactly the same thing as just losing a life. So literally, when you start a level, the best thing you can do is walk off into a pit and die so you get your hearts back.
Yeah, and when you have to do that as a player, it's really annoying.
Also, as the standard Bomberman power-ups of extra bombs and bigger explosions, but neither of them really make much impact in this game.
Bigger boom is always fun, but I mean, the problem is the bigger boom that you get out of this doesn't really feel like it's a very big
as opposed to like traditional Bomberman games where it's an obvious you get an extra square of distance. I feel like the more bombs matters as long as you have more than one bomb. Because at some point, you have way more bombs and are manageable, but like 3 to 4 is what you really need to start being able to like handle enemies.
There are also vehicle sections, like we alluded to earlier. There is part of me that really likes they all start with this super long cutscene that feels like a Zord launching sequence from like Power Rangers or something that has like a voice clip of Bomberman yelling the vehicle's name, most of which are not there. They're like things like Bomber Marine or other highly compressed garbage. But they play kind of like a terrible version of Star Fox 64, which really just makes me go, huh, wish I was playing some Star Fox 64. And that reminds me, the other thing I played this week was some of the original Star Fox on my Super NES Mini.
Oh, neat.
Because I got a new power strip and plugged everything into it, and I had forgotten that the Super NES Mini has a physical power switch instead of a power button, and it was switched on, so the moment I plugged it into my TV, it like stole attention. It was like, you want to play some Super Nintendo, right? I'm like, I guess now that you're here, I will.
Wow.
But this just makes me want to play Star Fox 64 or even the original Star Fox. Not a good game. Better game than the vehicle sections of this. But they control kind of like that. You can reverse a little bit. You can charge up your bomb to be a homing bomb, like the homing attack in Star Fox 64. You fight giant crabs underwater, like in Star Fox 64.
So the best part about this game is reminding you of a better game?
Yes. That I could be playing instead, because I own it in many capacities.
To be fair, the worst part of this game also reminds me of a better game. So, really, everything about this game makes me wish I was playing a better game.
So I talked about how the levels are very small and compact. The kind of challenge is getting all the points in levels by killing all the enemies and collecting all these little collectibles. But because the game base play isn't fun, doesn't feel like there's any incentive to actually try to hit the point pars.
Like, I just wanted to get through it as fast as possible.
Yeah, which makes the game even more boring.
Let me get out of here as fast as I can.
It's the opposite of Mario. It would be more fun if it could entice you to play slowly, but it cannot. Any other thoughts on Bomberman Hero? Because that's about all I got. Yeah, it's much worse than its predecessor, and I don't know how good it is because I haven't played it since I was a kid.
Oh, so Bomberman 64 came out before Bomberman Hero. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
This one's Martyr Perk is a dud.
So speaking of games that aren't good, we have a list of all the video games we've played from best to worst at our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. At the top is Chrono Trigger, a game with how many bombs? A couple, right?
A couple. I feel like Robo had some bomb attacks.
At the bottom is Echo the Dolphin, a game that is a bomb.
That's exactly the joke I was going to supply if you didn't have one.
In the middle is Kirby's Dream Course, a game that seems like a bomb would be a power-up in it.
But it's not.
So we have one other Bomberman game on this list, Bomberman 93.
That's the one that was on the TurboGrafx, right? With like the really blasé backgrounds. And
yes, it's kind of a puzzle game.
If I remember this one correctly, I would have to say that Bomberman Heroes is worse.
Yeah, I agree Bomberman Heroes is worse. Like, 93 was uninspired, but
multiplayer.
At least it was at least a competent Bomberman game.
Okay, I was expecting you guys to say it was better. I agree with you. I think it's worse, but I was just not expecting it to go this way. So I'm not sure what to compare it to next.
I think we have a very high premium on multiplayer in games.
It's perfectly fair. I think it's a very reasonable argument. It just wasn't what I was expecting.
Cruisin' Yusa, another train wreck of an N64 game?
That was an arcade game to start with.
I actually want to compare it to the only other 3D game we have this low, Postal 2.
Huh. I mean, we mostly got in Postal 2 for thinking it was so mature when really it was not.
Postal 2 controls better. It doesn't control well, but I think it controls better.
I would have to say, I think Postal 2 is actually a better executed game because it was doing some things. And like Jeremy said, it controls better. And there's a bit more freedom. Like, you can just follow the plot and do what you're supposed to be doing on each day, or you can just go hog wild and do whatever you want.
I was actually also going to add that, like, I hate its ideas, but at least it's trying something.
It's certainly not mature like it thinks it is, but yeah. It's, I think, better than this in its execution.
Whereas Bomberman Hero just feels like a lame Mario clone, like a really lame Mario clone. So I think it's actually worse than Postal.
So let's compare it to the only other game with bomb in the title down here. Mighty Bomb Jack.
Oh, man. This is the one, it was a platformer where, like...
Is this the one where you, where enemies would, like, randomly show up?
Yeah, but you also...
trying to grab the treasure chests.
Yeah, yes. And you're trying to, like, time when you get coins so that you get power-ups at certain times. It was an interesting arcade premise.
I like Mighty Bomb Jack's ideas more, but I think this game is a little better than that.
I'm trying to think because I can barely remember Mighty Bomb Jack, but I'm looking at the games beneath Mighty Bomb Jack and going, yeah, I think it's better than that. And I think it's better than that. Because if I can't remember the one, well, I'm going to have to compare it to other things. So I'd have to say, yeah, probably better than Mighty Bomb Jack.
So I was actually going to give it to Mighty Bomb Jack because it's at least an interesting premise. Even if it's poorly executed, whereas this is a boring premise that's also poorly executed.
I think you're outvoted, though.
Yeah, I am.
So how do we think it compares to Alex Kidd, The Lost Stars, the lowest Alex Kidd game we got on this list?
Also a pretty bad game.
Was this the first one?
Bow Wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
The first one, I think, is the highest rated one we have.
They only got worse.
So bad. I think I would have to give it to Alex Kidd. To be entirely honest with you, I think Alex Kidd is better executed. This Bomberman game, controlling it feels bad. And Alex Kidd, it was kind of a bad game. Blase, bland, boring as hell.
The controls were awful.
It controlled all right.
I think I would give it to Bomberman just because I'm remembering those backgrounds in Alex Kidd and how much it like hurt to stare at them, but I had to see if enemies were coming at me. And I think I prefer Bomberman Hero's bad controls to that assault on my eyes. So, Tyler, what is your thought?
I was actually also going to give it to Bomberman Hero. I think it's a slightly more competently executed platformer. The level design is better. I can't believe I'm saying that. Even if the controls are slightly worse, but, like, the level design is enough better.
So right above that is Another World.
No way in hell is this better than Another World.
I don't feel that strongly about it, but I agree that Another World was trying a lot of stuff, and I give it a lot of credit for that, I do not give Bomberman Hero.
I don't have to make a decision.
Do you want to make one anyway?
No.
Oh.
Well, actually, I don't think it's better than Axe Kid, going with that, but I honestly don't think it's better than Another World either.
All right, so Bomberman Hero will go way down there at number 218, above Alex Kidd The Lost Stars and below Another World.
I was really hoping it would be a contender with Echo, just so we could toss something not Echo at the bottom of the list.
I agree with you, but being honest, I don't think it's worse than Echo.
No, me neither. I wanted to have the discussion.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to deny that of you. But speaking of denial, Zach, what are we going to play next week?
So I was flipping through all the available games on the Wii U Virtual Console /Wii Virtual Console, and I came across this. So I think next week we're going to play Pocky and Rocky with Becky.
Yes! I love Pocky and Rocky. It's a great game.
Have you already played it?
Yes. I never played this iteration of it. I played the original Pocky.
The title is what caught my eye. I want to see what this is.
Remember, you're in the anime army now? Similar controls. It's an overhead 8-directional shooter, but with sweet... cute Japanese aesthetic.
It says it's a shoot 'em up video game, never actually came out in America in its initial run.
Okay, so next time on Last Time, banana is my favorite flavor of Pocky.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2018. All games, movies, and other media mentioned in this podcast are copyright their respective owners. If you wish to listen to more episodes, visit us at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can see the entire archive. If you wish to get in contact with us, you can email us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. This episode is over. Try listening to another one?
Beans, the magical fruit, grow a hive mind, and they are Groot.